Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ash Millman.
Hello.
And Josh Brown.
Hello.
Now, I don't know about you guys, but E3 2019 feels like a lifetime ago. I know it's only been a week. I don't know if time flies in your respective lives. I know. But I kind of wanted to just talk about the fallout from it, because there's been a lot of conversations around the necessity of E3, the whole conferences versus streaming and all that kind of stuff. So I kind of just want to open the floor. What do you guys think about the necessity of E3?
Ooh, I think it's a really lovely thing. I don't think it's like necessary in where we are at now with social media, but I think it's a really lovely event and it's a nice way of getting gamer culture together to have a big celebration of all the wonderful things that are going on in the industry. So yeah,
would you be sad if E3 went away?
I would. Yeah, I think so. But I think there's other things that are coming in that are like lowering the importance of it, but it's still a big like landmark for the gaming scene.
Yeah, I think its importance has waned, and I think it's sort of thing is like being this sort of opaque like marketing just machine.
Like place,
you know what I mean? Yeah. I think it's become more obvious what its intention is, to sort of get you hyped up for these games and just to be there to market games that aren't even finished and highlight things that might not even look like you expect them to further down the line. But at the same time, it's just fun, isn't it? It's just fun to get like caught up in it. Like, we don't have many of these events now, not like we used to before. And yeah, like you say, like social media has sort of taken its place and you get trailers every other day. But it's nice to sort of like celebrate the industry, even as cynical as it might be, because it just kind of wants you to get hyped in these games and pre-order these games. But at the same time, sometimes it's all right to be excited about things.
Well, I was going to say, what do you guys think about the whole, because there's a conversation happened this year that kind of was coming like more into view across the last few years in terms of viewing leaks and rumors as spoilers, like viewing it as like this thing we're all looking forward to. And then do we think of like, you know, you find out about something like Elden Ring or Bleeding Edge like beforehand, and that kind of quote unquote ruins the conference. Like, do we think of them as spoilers? I personally don't, but like I get the side that's looking forward to the event so much that they view it as spoilers. Because I'll get into what Jason Schreier was talking about the idea that, you know, you shouldn't think of them as spoilers. It's that, you know, there are products, they're just marketing. You're just you know, you're reading a press release early kind of thing. I think that's part of the excitement.
But some of the actual joy that E3 brings from those surprises, I think, like if we all knew Keanu Reeves was going to be there, we'd have just gone like, oh yeah, cool, Keanu Reeves is there.
Yeah.
But like, became popping out, being like, it's breathtaking, was like next level.
That was one of
like
the most unexpected things in like E3 history, I think.
Exactly. So big Keanu popping out. Like if someone had spoiled that, that would have lost all of the impact of it, which is just like, that feels like a celebration again of gamers, of gaming. It's like, oh, here's this really fun thing we've designed for you to see. Like, if I'd have known about it before, that would have felt like a spoiler.
Right, yeah.
Truthfully.
For me, it's like, if it's a few days before, like when Elden Ring was revealed, that was like the day before the conference, but it was like properly revealed, like the trailer came out. And when that happens, it's sort of like, ah, I could have waited a day. That's kind of like took the wind out of its sails a little bit. If it's like weeks in advance or whatever, and you just want to get like a tidbit here and there, I think that's fine. That's that's like the job of journalists in a way. But when the entire grand reveal is sort of spoiled or whatever, again, like, it only hurts like the sort of big sort of like companies, and like their marketing plans are like sort of ruined. But at the same time, like the people who made the game, like this was their moment to sort of unveil it. And like that genuine enthusiasm is like the highlight of E3. I love, for all of Bethesda's problems, when they get the developers out, you can tell they're really excited about the games. And I love that, like, they might leave the mics on purpose to sort of like celebrate each other, like going out and doing a good job. But that's cool. That's the best part of E3. Just seeing like the actual sort of human beings behind like the project. Yeah. So I do think if something is spoiled like so close to the event, that's kind of deflating for them. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's the journalist's job to find that information out. So that's quite conflicting.
That was the thing
know.
That like spilled out across Twitter. I don't know if you guys both saw the tweet like from Jason Trier just saying like, you know, be aware that when you're getting excited for these things, like, you know, they are still marketable products. And obviously, which is really interesting to then see loads of different devs then tweet on a reply or whatever. Like Corey Barlog for God of War just said he completely disagreed and said there's so much value in revealing the game itself. Trier then went on to like split those things apart. And I think it's hard to keep up with the thing because he was saying he obviously empathizes with the idea of creating, you know, like being behind a creative work and wanting to unveil it in a very specific way. Mm. And he totally respects that. But like, yeah, like you said, as a journalist, he has to, well, quote unquote, has to report on certain things.
Yeah.
So it's like he kind of separates the two things. But for me, like, I do see so much value in like a really good reveal. Like I was like, we talked about it on the last pod, but I like when it's like a cinematic trailer that builds up to a big kind of thing. Like I would be sad if those things went away. But like, do you think that as part of a problem or not?
I think the most important word there is like cinematic, because it is like it's like a film, isn't it? When you get a trailer and it reveals the big drop that's going to happen in the movie, that film becomes kind of like, oh. Yeah. And I know this is only build up for games marketing and everything and it's kind of different, but having that big impactful moment is just, I just think it's important. I just think it's nice. And it's a celebration. It's nice things. It's giving back to the fans and saying, look, we've done all this for you. This is our really exciting moment. Let's all get really hyped about this. And it's just nice.
Well, I think I get like his side that you don't want people to just be completely brainwashed and, you know, just like subsisting on hype and just buying into pre-orders and everything else. But assumedly with a more aware consumer base, you can have both. Like we can be really excited about a potential thing leaking and not immediately blind faith, like, you know, buy it straight away kind of thing. Like for me, you can have both, but I don't know if that's what you
think. I hope so. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the audience is like. Like when I was younger and I was watching like these big sort of like events and stuff, I would just buy into the hype totally.
We redownloaded Watch Dogs 2 immediately after seeing oh god, we're part of the problem. I don't know. I mean, I like the show. I mean, one of the things that Phil Spencer, the head of Xbox, he was on Giant Bomb talking to Jeff Gerspin, and he said that he views E3 as the one time that the whole industry comes together to make a whole bunch of noise for gaming, and he views that as a massive positive. And he was saying he was a bit disappointed, a bit gutted that Activision and Sony weren't there this year. Did you guys notice that they weren't there?
Like
this year felt a bit lacking.
Oh god, Sony missing is like I tried to talk about it on one of the other pods because I was like, it was The Last of Us and Ghost of Tsushima and all that sort of stuff that they have to offer, and they're big. But yeah, all the stuff that they have to offer, which is like the heavy hitters that goes along with all the exclusive that they have championed, like them being missing was a real big hole to the heart.
Yeah, because I mean, like, it's not only their first party stuff that's missing, but their partnerships. Like Activision wasn't present like on the actual conferences like all weekend. So it's not only the games that they're actively developing, but the partnerships they made with other publishers and developers who also don't get a look in. Like Capcom was barely there this weekend either.
And they have plenty of things to show off, or like tease as well. Like, I mean, we know that Resident Evil 3 remake, well, we don't know that it's coming, but we assume that it's very much coming. And then Resident Evil 8, they've said the next numbered installment will be coming at some point.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, you could do the logo reveal or whatever. Like, there's things that they could do to turn heads.
I think with Sony not being there just sort of shows how, like, these big reveal ceremonies aren't sort of outdated, but E3 as a whole might be. Not everyone needs to jump on E3 because everyone then is just scrapping for headlines, whereas Sony can just be like, look, Microsoft have the stage now. We don't want to be warring with them, because then we can put on our own show at PSX or whatever and just have the entire spotlight on us and what we're doing. And that kind of makes sense from a business standpoint, because then you get the people, you might not get the crossover of people just tuning in to every conference and being kind of swayed to buy like the console or whatever. But at this point, Sony have like, what, 100 million PlayStation 4s sold, so they don't really need that anyway. The install base is there, so they can just come out, target their audience, talk about like the Vita or talk about VR.
Talk about the Vita
thing.
I'll talk about
and
the
have
VR.
A good time. So I thought,
have you guys seen the PSVR?
It doesn't exist, does it?
It plays PlayStation 1 and the PlayStation 2.
You mean people play the Vita?
I do.
What?
I play it enough to represent a few hundred people. I play it every single day. Persona 4 is really good.
Is it?
It's really good.
Should I get it?
Yes, get one right now, Josh Brown. But also, that's the thing. I was going to talk about the audience for E3, because so many conferences, for so long, they'll put things out that I think appeal to people who aren't actually... They assume that like this wide mainstream audience is watching. Like EA are the worst for it.
Yeah.
And do a whole deep dive on like the new FIFA or whatever. And it's like people like... I think the vast majority of people watching E3 don't care about... sports games or like these random like financial statistics or whatever. We just want the hype. What do you guys think about the audience of the people that watch E3? Should it be more catered towards us, essentially?
Oh, I think the stuff that lasts from E3 is the big trailer moments and everything. The stuff that you read about afterwards is the highlights, and that's the thing that's important to me. I think that they should do everything that they want to talk about, though, isn't it? I think it's like it's their moment to talk about all these different things, and that's what makes the heavy hitters more impressive when they're surrounded by all the fluff, and then you get to one, you're like, whoa, that was really good. And I think that the way that it functions where you have all of that on stage and then afterwards you can pick it apart for the people who aren't like in the audience, I think that's a good way of doing it personally, because then everything's out there, but the people who are interested in only the top stuff can just get to it afterwards.
I think kind of like a problem as well is sort of expecting every announcement to be something you are interested in, if that makes sense. Because even back in the day when I used to watch it and not everything hit, I'd be like, oh, maybe that was disappointing because I only liked X, Y, and Z. But then when I look at X, Y, and Z, I'm like, whoa, those are three big games for me to look forward to. Yeah. I can't remember who said it. I think it might have been someone from Sony. But I think when they're planning a conference, they like to have three games that any sort of gamer would be interested in.
Right.
I think that's like the sort of thing. So whether you like sports, whether you like racing games, whether you like action RPGs, first-person shooters, you can come away with three games and being like, wow, I've got these to look forward to. I think that's a good way to do it. That's broad enough to get everyone in. But at the same time, if you're going to buy FIFA, you're going to buy FIFA already. You know, I don't want Pelé coming on stage.
Yeah, I think it can kind of pivot into conferences versus streaming as well, because Nintendo have been doing Nintendo Directs for, I don't know, 3-4 years, whatever it is now. What do you guys think of that? Because I like the kind of the bombast of the conference, but especially this year, going from kind of like lackluster conferences to just watching Nintendo do 42 minutes of heaven.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
And so that kind of made me go, maybe I do just want it intravenously shot into my eyes.
Well, maybe. Yeah. I like the theatricality of it. I like when Sony came out the past couple of years and they had bodies hanging from the ceiling and
see, that stuff
had this
I
big orchestra. You know what? If you're going to go E3, do it big and do it like Raj, get Keanu Reeves out on stage, get a bunch
get the
of
Lego car,
out.
Man.
As long as you, yeah, exactly.
That was
the Lego
good,
car.
Yeah, that was
as long as you have the games to back that theatricality up and it's not just masking the fact that you have no substance, then bring it all. Like, there's a way to do Nintendo Directs where you have these streamed, focused, tight game reveals. But also, I've seen Sony State of Plays, and if that's the future, I'm very upset about it.
I don't think they know how to do it, to be honest.
No.
Yeah, I just don't think they... I think they're holding back for certain things, for certain embargoes or NDAs or whatever it is, or just because they don't have release dates in place. And then they're like, oh, well, we kind of have these like dregs that we can reheat and put out, and it's just not enough. Whereas Nintendo hang back until E3 and go, here's this massive thing.
Yeah.
But they do it for their like separate directors. Well,
I love that like a lot of the big publishers are doing that now. They're sort of spacing out their announcements. We don't have all of these different sort of conferences that we used to have. Like Sony have sat out big conferences in the past. Mm. They've waited to make their big two E3 and usually PSX, which they sat out. Mm-hmm. You know, they've changed that up now. But I think every 6 months, having a conference like E3 or whether it's their own sort of show that they're putting on, I think that's valuable because you get enough time to build up that library of games that people are gagging to see, and then you get to just wow them rather than kind of being like, oh, we've got some games in development. He's a screenshot or he's a trailer. Yeah,
yeah.
He's a title. The game is coming. I don't know. Well, at some point.
Some point in the future.
Does it look like that's what E3 is going to head towards, though, where it's going to be kind of like the collective showcase of all the stuff that's happened throughout the year, whereas everyone has their own little announcements and excitement things seeded all the time throughout, and then you can watch them and be like, oh my God, that's happening. And then E3 is just going to be like, okay, well, here's everything. Here's all our financial numbers. Here's
FIFA.
That was
the weird thing, because with Ubisoft's one, that's what that was. It was like, yeah, we got Division DLC and the Rainbow Six DLC. And I know they had a slightly new Rainbow Six, the zombie thing. But like for me, watching that unfold, I was like, well, all these fan bases are already plugged into your respective fan channels and fan communities and forums and everything else. So you don't need to waste our time at E3.
Yeah.
Like, that's going to kill E3 if they start going like, here's some stuff you already know about or some stuff you're already plugged into.
See, I'm kind of conflicted on this because I think this is sort of the changing nature of the industry as a whole. Like, I've talked to you about this before. Yeah. Scott, like as we go towards like these live services, which are designed to be around for years, that will be what you get at E3 because that's what people are focusing on and actively developing.
All
which
the
you know,
new stuff, Josh.
I want the new stuff as well, but I'm saying at the same time, like these games are designed to be supported for years and years with brand new content and huge overhauls. Like Siege has been at every E3 for about 4 years now, something ridiculous. And I know you mean that a lot of those communities will be plugged in, but at the same time, people like me who have a passing interest in them who jumped in at launch when I saw stuff for like The Division 2 or something. I was thinking, maybe I'll jump back into this again. Because
right.
I'm not in those communities. I don't know what's happening intricately with these games. So when I do see them in a big flashy trailer, it gets me reinterested.
It does make you realize that it is worthwhile.
I mean,
I think in Ubisoft's case, that's like an extension of their general approach to the games that they have right now. Because they're one of the only like big tier publishers that are prioritizing games as a service in terms of supporting it. Like they're not just saying it. Like with Anthem, it's like, oh yeah, it's a games as a service. And you can keep coming back and playing every day. But there's nothing there.
He's the roadmap.
Yeah, he's like a new map, kind of, but not really. And then obviously with Ubisoft, though, it's like, yeah, constant new maps, constant new characters and whatever else. So maybe that's just an extension for them. But what do you think about, like, I don't know, the future being streaming, like if they stream their new games too?
What do you mean at E3 or separately?
Well, you wouldn't have a Keanu Reeves reveal, basically. You wouldn't have things like that. You wouldn't have the hanging bodies.
No.
You know, I think that's a real big part and parcel of it, having the exciting, oh my God, this is happening moments. And I'd be really sad if that went away, but I also think that it is going to go away because we are going to get it separated out throughout the year and have all the different streaming things. But I think they need to learn how to harness and do those correctly and not do them too often or frequently and just have them as their own, maybe like a couple of monthly things that they're kind of keeping everyone in the loop, but making them still have oomph behind them. Nintendo are a great one as an example for doing it really well, really tight. Like that would be great if people could implement that and then have E3 as their mini showcase.
That's kind of how I would see it, I guess, because you have like you can totally do like a whole bunch of E3s all across the year. I mean, like PlayStation and Xbox both have, it's like PlayStation Experience and whatever Xbox's is called. It has a really weird name that no one ever remembers, which I did call X23 the other day, and that's an X-Men
character.
So it's not that, but it's called something like X09 or whatever it is. They have their own thing, whereas Nintendo just keep being like, here's more live streams and here's that kind of stuff. Also, in terms of like where E3 kind of sits during the year, it used to be the, because we can talk about game development and how that ties into E3 and what we expect to see at E3. Because you are about, we all talked about it, like a lack of gameplay this year.
Yeah.
How much of that is like totally fine based on the realities of game development? Like, how much do we expect game developers to turn up with demos these days?
Well, again, this is a weird one, and why E3 this year felt weird for me, because you had no real hands-on demos, and it felt strange. Like, obviously, it's fine to not have anything to show from games that are a long way away. And yes, as a culture, we've moved towards sort of ripping these games apart, like going off at Spider-Man for changing some puddles from this pre-release trailers to the actual release game. But at the same time, when you're debuting Gears 5, for instance, you're talking up Gears 5, and you've got three different trailers to show for it, and not one of them show gameplay, and the game is coming out in September. So there's a weird disconnect there. So what am I supposed to get excited about?
I really didn't get why we didn't get gameplay this year. Like, I get that it's a stopgap year between, or the 1 year before the next big systems drop and everything. Like, I get that. But wouldn't that mean that you're completely comfortable with the tech so far, and you have more gameplay to show? Ooh. And obviously, you know, they had show floor demos. Like, Final Fantasy VII was one of the only games that got a live demo, and there's like bits and pieces of the Avengers stuff.
Yeah.
But for the most part, most of the games that were shown had hands-on stuff away from the stages. Like, Cyberpunk didn't get anything on stage other than that CG trailer or whatever. But, like, did you notice it?
I've said this before. I quite like a good trailer, a good CG trailer, and that is my hype for the game. Me saying, oh, okay, well, I like all these themes, I like the ideas, I like the vibe of this story, because I am so, like, hooked into what I want from a narrative from a game.
Right.
Seeing a trailer for it that's just a big cinematic trailer, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going to get it, that's good. but, like, the gameplay stuff, obviously, I still would like to see, and I would like to see more of it. But for me, E3 this year was fine, because I was like, whoa, okay. Yeah, right. I get the vibe of everything. I'm enjoying this. I know things I'm going to invest in, and I'm excited. And that was what I got from it. But I know it was a lot different for other people.
Yeah.
I suppose at this point, like, the idea of having these gameplay demos when they're really just vertical slices of games that aren't complete yet compared to like a CG trailer isn't even all that different. Mm-hmm. Like, we always hear about like these developers having to take chunks of time out their regular development process to make a vertical slice just to impress players, and then they're going to pick it apart anyway because it's not reflective of a game that's even sort of it can be played, if that makes sense, which is frustrating. Maybe they just sort of kind of understand that now, like that's not a great way to sort of divert your resources, and people are going to ridicule it anyway, so just give them a CGI trailer that's about as reflective of the final product as gameplay will
be. Like CDPR literally said that we're going to hold back and we're going to release it when it's good and ready for Cyberpunk. But obviously they went through that whole downgrade controversy with The Witcher 3, which for me, like the comments on that was so fascinating, because from the dev side they were saying like, look, we haven't downgraded it, we've just optimized it, we had to take a reduction in the visuals to bump up the frame rate and everything else. But maybe their solution right now to solve those conversations is to just do CG trailers and everyone figures it out. But for me, I think you're losing something.
But is it not better to have E3 as the trailer showcase and then have gameplay seeded afterwards? So you have all E3 is like the big reveal hype train, and then afterwards you can go, okay, I'm going to look out for gameplay of this when it's better at a more.
In that case, why not do a live stream?
Oh. Just saying. But like then that's what E3 is then. It's like the big hype vehicle. And then afterwards you can look for your gameplay and go, okay, well, I'm going to follow this, I'm going to get invested in it, and then you can have all your comments and talks about it afterwards then.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
That sounds... That sounds good to me.
We can talk
my
about,
idea.
Like the potential downsides as well of when they do the big gameplay showcases because so many things go wrong so frequently.
Yeah.
Like we've all seen so many cringe moments. I mean, there was that whole one the first time they showed Uncharted 4, mm-hmm. one of the first times, and where the controller just wasn't connected and Drake just stood there for like 5 minutes and then they had to go to something else. I think they eventually got it working, but whatever.
Yeah.
But what do you guys think of that? That there's like almost this risk to doing the gameplay stuff, whether it be from a build side or just the.
I remember when they first showed off Days Gone, and like that was like a full, 10, 15 minutes demo of when you're fighting the horde at the sawmill, mm-hmm. and that looked so janky. Like it was kind of impressive to see a new IP, but at the same time, the AI, you could tell like that wasn't programmed right. The animations weren't there. The guns didn't sound that good. You couldn't even tell who was getting hit. And like, it was a good proof of concept, but at the same time, it was not reflective of a finished product and didn't get hype.
I was gonna say, plus, if these things are meant to make you invest in the product, maybe you put down a pre-order or whatever. Mm. Something like Mass Effect Andromeda killed that game, because they literally had a character holding a gun backwards, and then the lip sync wasn't there.
Well,
and it's like maybe there's just. You know, it does more harm than good.
Why are EA so bad at it every single time? EA and BioWare, actually. Every time they show off a game like that, whether it's Anthem or Mass Effect, it's like, whoa, he's a dude jumping from pillar to pillar for 5 minutes, not doing anything. Oh, great, thank you. Anthem. He's then flying for 10 minutes.
Well, this is what you get for gameplay reveals, isn't it? Like, you could just have a really nice trailer of a man jumping around on pillars with some good music playing in the background, and I'd be like, wow, yeah, cool, good.
I remember the first thing that we saw of Mass Effect Andromeda was at the, it was like their 4K showcase or something, and they just showed, oh, there's a green light in the background and it kind of reflects. And if you look over here, it's in 4K. And I was like, is this really what you have?
Yeah.
I guess like maybe in that case, it'd be better for like a CG trailer. But I think it's weird because if you talk about like pre-orders and investing in stuff, like for me, I'm investing in the gameplay. Like, yeah, they can hint at like narrative elements and storytelling and stuff. But I don't know if you guys do this, but when I watch gameplay, I always like imagine how that's going to play anyway. I can see how responsive that animation is. I can see what that's going to feel like. But like I said, like, do you think they're losing something in terms of what E3 is even supposed to provide?
At the same time, I think there's a distrust with the audience, if that makes sense. Like, I want gameplay when I go to E3, but I think you open yourself up to such scrutiny. Like when Sony debuted The Last of Us 2 gameplay, and everyone was saying, oh, that can't be real. That must have been like pre-rendered.
Even other devs were saying that.
Yeah, I know. And then Naughty Dog were like, no, this is how it plays. So when you do something truthful and try to be as close to the actual end result as you can, and then people still call you out on it, it's kind of like, what's the point?
Yeah. It's true,
There's so much criticism in the gameplay side of it that I think it's just fair for them to just draw back and go, right, we're going to wait until like it's actually ready and then we'll show you a bit of it. And I think that's fair. And I think that, again, is another way of building hype and saying, okay. But from an investment point of view, when it's pre-orders and stuff and you've got a game you're supposed to be putting money down and going, okay, this is what I'm getting, then there is a problem. I think I'm a lot more of a casual player than from your side of it.
Filthy.
I feel like my step away from the industry is a lot more like, yeah, that's cool, whereas about what you want. So maybe that's a difference in that as well.
Maybe. I think that's interesting though, because like coming out of E3 2019, the general pieces that I've seen being written about it or talked about on Twitter and just general social media stuff has been that it's quite deflating, that we didn't have that much to talk about. I think when you run it all up and you can check our last podcast, there is enough to talk about.
Yeah.
But then it's like, well, predicting E3 2020, where do you see them going from here? Do we stick to this new format where, you know, we're wowing up front and you'll come for the gameplay later? Or do they come with their new demos, new consoles, and this year was just a weird
That's what I would like. I would like the big wow factor in that. And like, even if it means that things get like scaled down slightly in terms of like length of conferences and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. That's what I want. I just want a massive, big, like the kind of like VGA sort of style thing, because that's such a good little event. Like last year's VGAs were great.
I prefer the VGAs.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's because mainly because you get the award side of it, but like, they had more stuff to show, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like, I think it just makes more of an impact, because like when you've got like two different things, you've given out the awards and it's like, well, he's this huge game we're also debuting, and you get like best of both worlds, whereas E3, you get the huge game reveals, but then you've also got these presenters sort of like reading off an order queue and messing up, which, you know, I respect that. I do that all the time.
We totally empathize with that.
Yeah, it sort of like kind of breaks the momentum a little bit. I mean, I love that part of E3, to be honest. I love that humanity that comes with those mistakes or those mess ups or those awkward silences. I live for that stuff.
Yeah.
I'm kind of waiting to see if you guys haven't followed KrobyCat on YouTube. Like, he tends to do the best compilations of E3 cringe, and I haven't seen his 2019 one yet, if there is one online yet. But I thought, like, in streamlining it, there wasn't as much cringe this year, minus the Anthem thing, which was terrible. There was one, I keep bagging on Anthem, I don't mean to, but it's just that, like, there was one segment where they had, like, a live audience bit with all a whole bunch of fans sitting around one dude from Anthem's development team just asking questions, and his responses were horrible, and it was just really cold and awkward. But I wonder if streamlining it in that way gets around one of the things that dogged E3 for years. You remove the cringe if you just, you know, it's a trailer show.
Well, that was it. I think you got that with Ubisoft's especially. Not only was it less than, like, 3 hours like it normally is, but no, 2 hours. They normally go on for too long.
Where's Aisha Tyler while we're on?
I don't know. I missed her.
She's the best
really
thing about E3, and she's gone.
But at the same time, by cutting out the gameplay trailers, you also didn't get the canned sort of banter when you're playing Rainbow Six Siege. Yeah. That is reflective of how anyone plays games.
You did get the woo man. There was a woo man in every single crowd, even in Bethesda, when it was like, we're doing DLC. Like, yeah!
Woo!
I like some DC.
NPCs.
I also wanted the last thing I was going to mention is how early do you think that it's okay to announce a game? Because we had Metro Prime 4 showed the logo. Death Stranding, it's been like 3 or 4 years ago.
You become thinking about Elder Scrolls 6 again. Like, every time that they've announced it too soon. Like, it needs to be. You need to be announcing it, I think, within 2 years of release.
Right.
Like, I think I think you need to have that frame in mind. For me personally, it's very demanding. This is what I want. But I think 2 years, because there's time for it to be actually followed and build momentum without being released like straight away.
Good. So, Josh,
you know what, when Fallout 4 was announced, it was coming out 6 months after it was first unveiled. I thought, this is the future, and to see everyone, including Bethesda, peel away from that is very disappointing. I think Square Enix are perhaps the worst for it by announcing games way too early, because much changes during development that you can't guarantee that something stay the same all the way through. It's why we get so angry at gameplay changes in like the gameplay trailers and stuff. But at the same time, I think Death Stranding have done it in a really interesting way. Like, they announced the game before they even had an engine, and they keep showing off trailers, but you can't tell what's changed behind the scenes because they've been so mysterious and vague that the hype has sort of stayed, but they don't open themselves up to the criticism of this is different, this isn't what you promised.
True.
But that has been such long coming, and the only reason that is so in like good is because of the people behind it. If that was with every single game, I would lose my rag.
That's kind of the thing because, like, I mean, Hideo Kojima put out a big timeline saying, like, we announced it here, we did this, we acquired the engine, whatever. And it's like, well, obviously he's working with the same staff he's been with for like almost 30 years now, at least for some of them anyway, especially Yoji Shinkawa. And it's like, he knows his team inside out. And then you have someone like Rockstar, who, like, I think have quite a heavy turnover. But even they will announce something and then drop it within the same year, I think that's what happened with GTA 5. It wasn't that long after announcement that it dropped, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's like that idea of like actually staying away from E3 and hype altogether until you're completely ready to just play a card.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's like, this is the thing and it's real and you can capitalize on that. Like, for me, one of the biggest extreme examples of zero marketing was Pokemon Go, because it was just like, it's out, and then it was the biggest game in the world like overnight.
Yeah.
And something like Dauntless just did that, in Fortnite too.
Yeah.
And it's like how much value is in there in moving away from this altogether?
I think you should have a sort of roadmap in mind, like you said, Ash. Like, 2 year period is quite good. I think you need to know that you can hit whatever date you put on, or you're going to hit a window that you put on it. Because even though like Rockstar did all right with GTA, I think from a marketing perspective, I think with Red Dead they kind of dropped the ball a little bit. They announced that, then they delayed it, then they delayed it again, and the marketing wasn't there. You didn't really know what. I mean, we didn't even know how the game really played.
It was
really so long.
Yeah, there's like those weird videos where it was like hands-on gameplay with like that voiceover narration thing, where it's like, here's your new abilities, and then it seemed like that was going to be a weekly thing because there were two in a row, and then nothing for like 4 months or whatever it was. I don't know if that ties into what you were going
to say. No, yeah, it's just like that. Like, that obviously didn't hurt the game in the long run. It still sold ridiculous amounts, but it may potentially hurt the investment in it, or your hype in like that game. I think it was just a little bit deflating to watch. Like, delays always make a game better, but when it sort of doesn't instill confidence in a product, that you don't get like behind the people making it, because you're like, why what's going wrong, what's happening here?
That's another one they can only get away with by it being Rockstar though again. But this is the whole thing, if it's smaller games and smaller companies and that sort of thing, I think the closer you are to release the better, and the more you can drop and the more you can reveal and the more you can seed with it. Don't ever give me Elder Scrolls 6 and then make me wait 8 years again. Like,
it's 8 just, years.
Yes, you have been told, like, Todd.
Don't do
Mr.
it.
Mr. Howard, the we hell
know,
you think you're
but
doing?
But you know it's not coming because Starfield has to come.
The reason they did that, though, is because, like, they knew they didn't have that much to show last year. So it was like, oh, by the way, here's an Elder Scrolls 6 logo. And we've kind of narrowed down the location, one of a few places. But I think that's kind of like the problem with announcing stuff too early. Nintendo announced the logo for Metroid Prime and then canned the development and restarted it. But I think, like, in terms of hype, it's like there is this sort of like bell curve to it, which I think I mentioned in another podcast. Mm. But, like, you know, you announce something, the hype gets bigger, the social media traffic gets bigger, you look at Google Trends, you can see that things are spiking. That's when it should drop, like that build to that peak, because if you miss that, it only falls off.
Yeah.
And it's like, I guess we're seeing an industry experiment with when to put things out, when to maximize that curve. I can't think of that many games that have really done it well, other than, because most of them fall back on their reputations. Like, GTA did well because it's Rockstar and GTA. Yeah. Like, Bethesda will do well because it's Elder Scrolls and Fallout.
Yeah. To be fair, the Fallout example, at Fallout 76's announcement, I know it wasn't what everyone wanted, and then it also was complete crap.
A bit of a lull.
Yeah. The way that they did it, like, they announced it quite soon. It came out the same year. They had all the things. They had the beta. They had all that sort of thing. The way that they timed everything, I think, was really good. I think that was a great example. Mm-hmm. And if everyone could do that and nail that as well, but also maybe do, like, a good game, that would be a good game
from Bethesda. Yeah, yeah. It's been a while. Skyrim was a long time ago.
I want people to start doing, like, Beyonce album drops where it's just like, boom, there's the album. You know what I mean?
Like, Avenged Sevenfold. Josh.
Beyonce is better.
I like that too. That's kind of the Pokemon Go thing. Yeah. Like, by the way, it's fully formed right here.
Apex Legends, and then what they did, they managed to bypass a lot of the negative press that would come with EA announcing a Battle Royale game. Yeah. Like, actually, you know, it's good. Just try it, honestly.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. If you can say something, that's what was so lush about the Nintendo thing. Because something like Cadence of Hyrule or whatever, it was just like, I mean, that wasn't the announcement, but they showed something and then said, by the way, you can play it in 2 days. And so, I think just the speed of social media and the way that we interact with media and products and entertainment means that you can announce something and then cash in on it. That hype curve that I'm describing, for me, that crunches into a week if you do it well.
Oh God, viral sensation is that is one of the, I think for smaller companies and production studios, viral sensation is the way to go because you're just literally, you pop something off and be like, hey, here it is, and then it's going to make the rounds, isn't it? Agreed. I've just said all the same thing that you guys have just said again. Let's reinforce it.
So. I'm a big fan of it. Yeah. So we can end on, what do you guys just, I guess going forward, what do you want to see from next year's E3 and E3's role in the industry overall? Mine is just a big showcase of everything. Give me the live demos, give me more demos. Let it be this big celebration of gaming. I kind of view it in the same, I think the Video Game Awards nailed the they treat the industry with more respect. You had sort of creatives coming out and talking about their work. You had profiles of veteran developers, and obviously you have the awards themselves.
Yeah.
So I like the heart that's in the Video Game Awards. I think E3 is maybe lacking a bit of heart because it's become so showcasey and showreely and glitzy and glamour kind of thing. But that's the one place where you can drop an announcement and the whole world goes, oh my god, it's George Martin and From Software's on YouTube. So for me, it would be that. It would be all gameplay, the biggest showcase possible.
Yeah.
That'd be for me, the biggest glitzy glamour thing possible.
That feels like the E3s of past.
Yes,
though,
it does.
You want the old E3 back.
I do.
But I would say my future of E3 would be, I want trailers. Mm. I just want loads of trailers, and I want big, thematic, theatrical, ridiculous sets, and it to be here's a drop, here's a drop, here's a drop, and then have that as the actual conferences, and then the actual event, having everyone being able to play the games and do their things outside of that. But yeah, have the actual screenings and stuff that everyone's watching from home, just be like, whoa, here's everything. That's what I'd like.
When Sony tried to do a blend where they were, I think it was a couple of years ago, when they were just mostly it was them doing a live stream, but they still hired space and they had people sitting there watching the stream, and they would cut back to the audience just as Sean Layden would come on screen and be like, by the way, here's another trailer.
Yeah.
He would leave and it would do the same thing again. So it's there is a way to sort of hybridize the two. They didn't do it very well. But they could totally do the thing this year when Microsoft, they showed Austin Creed and the other wrestlers playing Gears 5, cut back and cut to their gameplay and then cut back to another trailer. Is that what you were going to say?
Kind of, yes. Good. I thought Sony did it really well, actually. I thought they had the theatricality of it, then also had just boom trailer, boom trailer, boom game, boom game. I thought there was no fat in that conference.
Right.
I want conferences to be tighter. They did well this year, but with just no fat, no messing about. If you're going to show 60 games, make sure all 60 games are really good.
Yeah.
I'd like release dates bits. I'd like a mix of gameplay, and if the game is too far away, just a CG trailer, because they're it's all good.
Or just
it's all good content, Bront.
Or don't mention it at all, maybe? Would you take a logo? Because I did still... That's the thing. I still popped at the Metroid Prime logo, even though there's nothing there. Just two words and a number. It still made me go, oh, God, it's coming.
Yeah, give me a...
No. The rage afterwards is too much, honestly, when you know you have
you're
to wait so
you're actively annoyed
long.
About Elder Scrolls 6.
I really am. I thought it was happy last year, and I'm not. Like, I'm really not. Like, I've got to wait so... And, like, we all know it's bubbling under the surface. That is the hype that they've got, because we all know it's always there. They're always working on these IPs. And then they've dropped it, literally, just to get everyone going, woo, Elder Scrolls 6.
Do you want a new one first? Do you want Starfield before?
I want it to, like... coming in given time, like in time. not just use the logos as little let's stir everyone up, make them go crazy for it, and then 6 years later, oh, it's again.
I think last year was the year of the logo, and then this year was the year of the stream.
Let me clarify
logos, but only if you have a release date at the end.
Yes.
If you plan on finishing it up, if you're like Elder Scrolls 2035,
I'd respect that. Respect I would that respect more. That more. I would respect that more. That would like stop me from seeing.
I think
it was...
that implies that they have a plan that they're rolling out, as opposed to just going like, well, this is coming at some point, and we'll figure it out as we go. But yes, let us know what you think down in the comments below if you're watching on YouTube, or you can find us on social media if you're on any of the audio platforms. For now, though, I've been your host, Scott Tilford, from the What Culture Gaming Podcast, joined by Ash Millman.
Oh, goodbye. Sorry.
And Josh Frown.
Goodbye, everyone.
I will catch you next time.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.